And welcome back to the First Cut Podcast with Kyle Porter here on CBS Sports. I am Chip Patterson. That's Kyle Porter. We've got Torrey Pines in the books, the Farmers Insurance Open. Congratulations to Justin Rose, your winner this weekend. We've got a lot to get to. We've got Tiger Woods, obviously. Tiger Watch always on deck here on the First Cut Podcast with Kyle Porter. An interesting performance from Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth. A lot to get to with Jon Rahm, who lost his cool a little bit, but still pulled it together with a top five finish. Kyle, man, you've been in Orlando at the PGA Merchandise Show. How are you doing, man? Big golf week for Kyle Porter.
Yeah, it was. I feel like I've been kind of all over the place, but this really felt like, I thought that it would feel this way coming in. It felt like the first, like, okay, this is a real thing. Like, this is a big time event. This leaderboard is legit. I mean, how good was that leaderboard on Saturday afternoon and into Sunday? I mean, even if you look at the final board, it's Rose, Adam Scott, Hideki, Jason Day, Rory, and Jon Rahm are your top six of your top seven. And then the other one in there is Oklahoma State legend Taylor Gooch, who finished top five for the second straight event. So you basically got six top, 20 guys, top 15 guys. And then Taylor Gooch, who's, you know, maybe a top five player in the world. So,
No. Listen, you can get your Oklahoma State homerism in. That is fine. But you will not let Taylor with no Y be claimed as a top five player in the world.
No, he played great, and the board was awesome. And
Kokrak was up there too.
Yeah.
Jason Kokrak was in the mix.
Joel Dahman.
Listen, the leaderboard on Saturday was incredible for the fact that and maybe this was even like an early Saturday, late Friday. Because the names you just mentioned, the ones that ended up at the top, whether it's, you know, Justin Rose, Jon Rahm, Adam Scott, Hideki Matsuyama, Jason Day, Rory McIlroy, like Billy Horschel even, Gary Woodland, who we've already seen play very well in recent weeks. Like, it did have every bit of world-class competition at the top. But, man, there were some names that you were looking on Saturday. You're like, huh, so is he going to win this thing on Sunday?
Well, that's the thing right now, is that there's so many good players playing really well that you don't really
it's hard to give them credit. Like Taylor Gooch, like, you're about to tell me all about Taylor Gooch, and I'm like, he played a fantastic week at Torrey freaking Pines, but I just never gave him a chance looking at his name on the leaderboard ever.
Well, and we're not really getting these random tournaments where you've got who was the guy that won the one at Quail Hollow that year that Phil was up there and Rory and all those guys were up there, and he was like the fifth alternate and he ended up winning, and it's the only thing he's ever won. I can't believe I can't remember his name. Do you know who I'm talking about?
No, but keep talking, and I'll have it by the time you finish your next point.
So anyway, he wins the tournament, and my point is that, like, we haven't gotten a tournament like that in a while where you've got these huge names up near the top, but somebody like a
Derek Ernst.
Derek Ernst, there you go. Somebody like a Sepp Straka just sneaks in. He finished T13 this week, by the way. Just sneaks in and wins the tournament. Like, I just don't feel like and maybe I never see that coming, but I don't feel like that's going to happen when we have these full field kind of loaded up events right now.
And some of that is because, what, all right, here as we start with Justin Rose, our winner, my note was, and this was before Sunday really got going, I think he was four holes into Sunday, I said, all in the midst of Tiger Mania, at Torrey Pines, where Tiger's won seven Farmers Insurance Opens and a U.S. Open, did Justin Rose just win it Tiger style? 63, 66, and then just play defense on the weekend?
Well, I said this on HQ after the tournament. Shout out HQ. Everybody should be watching.
But CBSSportsHQ.com, CBS Sports app is where you can find us all the time. Catch me at 6 o'clock on Sportsline on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, picking college basketball games against the spread.
He won the tournament on Friday.
Right. Yes.
So he goes 63 at the North on Thursday, and then he goes 66 at the South on Friday, and that's kind of for somebody like Rose, obviously you got to play the weekend and, you know, whatever. That's kind of a wrap.
Right.
I mean, you go 66 at the South after you've already just torched the North, then it's kind of over. And Rory said that on Saturday. He was like, it's funny because I think that a lot of times we watch golf and we're like, oh, that guy's within four. And you're like, okay, well, who's he within four of? What course are they playing? And how many holes are left? Because it's different if you're within four after the front nine on Thursday, and you're within four like late on Saturday. That's a big difference. And especially with somebody like Justin Rose, it's just, even though he wobbled a little on Sunday, he's not going to give that lead up. You know, Adam Scott, how about this? Adam Scott goes, he's 8 under on Friday night.
You know, 65-68.
This is a tournament where like 10 under wins it, 12 under, 9 under. You know, it's around there. He goes 65-68 and doesn't even, I don't even think he held the lead ever.
No, he did not.
I don't think he touched the lead. And I mean, he was awesome. I was so impressed with how he was playing, and he just kind of got blitzed by Rose. I mean, it was really impressive. And that's what shooting that 66 on Friday, that 66 gets a little lost, right? You're live blogging it. People are like kind of paying attention, but it's Friday afternoon or whenever. I don't remember if he played in the morning. And you're just like, oh, Justin Rose shot a 66. And people aren't really paying attention until Sunday, but the tournament was over on Friday. And that happened when Bubba won Augusta in 14. I know I probably referenced that a few times, but he shot like a 66 or 65 at Augusta on Friday. And it was over, because you get somebody like that good and playing that well out in front, that's ball game. It's done.
So Justin Rose now has double-digit PGA Tour wins, joining only, and this is a note that if you've been watching on CBSSports.com or reading on Kyle's grades, only Sergio Garcia and Rory McIlroy. Justin Rose is the world number one right now, which brings back that fun conversation about, you know, how much does being world number one matter? He just won at Torrey freaking Pines, to add to a list of, like, don't you call him pelts? Is that a you? Did I get that from you?
Yeah.
Your pelts on the wall. I mean, might be problematic, but whatever. I feel like you add Torrey Pines to his list of courses that he's won at, and it's just so, so impressive. And yet, I feel like Justin Rose, as the world number one, as somebody who is just world-class, Hall of Famer, I feel like he falls second in the conversation topics, because when you're discussing something with a common golf fan, selling Justin Rose can be tough, especially when it's like, oh, so Tiger made the weekend cut? All right, cool. What did he do? Well, he played really well on Sunday, and Tiger's Sunday feels like it's got more sticking power than Justin Rose's win.
I know. And Tiger lost by 11. Rory lost by a touchdown, and he played great, you know? The Rose thing is weird. I know you weren't accusing me of this. I go the other way with Rose. I really like him. Like, not just, I definitely like him as an interview and just in the, you know, couple of times that I've been around him. Like, I think he would be awesome to have a beer with, like just to hang. Like, he'd be a great hang.
Agree.
But I also kind of like, I, and again, I think we've talked about this. I get why people don't like him on the course. The smug, like, everybody remembers the, 17th at Medina in 12 when he hit that, like,
I don't think they do. I think he's shed that. I think within the golf community he might not have, but I think Justin Rose for the most part has become just sort of an accepted character, right? Like, he is, do you know what he is right now? He's a Virginia basketball. Everyone accepts the efficiency. Everyone accepts that it is good. But there is something that is permitting either fans who are not just straight up Justin Rose fans, the same way, like, no one likes Virginia basketball if you are not a Virginia fan, right?
Yeah.
Am I too in college basketball right now? But the efficiency was where I got it, where I was like,
no,
Justin Rose doesn't do anything wrong. He doesn't make mistakes. And when he lights it up, he's going to be able to put his foot down and put himself in a position to not have the blow up holes. And the first time that he had them was on the front nine on Sunday. And maybe that was some nerves and that got to him. But like for the most part, Justin Rose is so rock solid. That's where the Virginia basketball comparison comes in. And I guess from like a fan standpoint, that's also where it is. It's like, all right, yeah, I mean, he doesn't really excite me, but he sure seems good.
It is weird, right? Because I think that, like, let's compare. So I got that stat, that double digit. So three Europeans have won double digit times on the PGA Tour since World War II. That's a Justin Ray special. If you're not following Justin Ray of Golf Channel on Twitter, you should be. He's awesome. He's got all the numbers. So let's compare Sergio and Justin Rose. They've had essentially the same PGA Tour career. I mean, basically, like Sergio's won 10 of 335 events, and Rose has won 10 of 327 events. They both have one major. They're basically the same. I mean, I think Sergio is just in a vacuum a better golfer, but they've essentially had the same career. And I wonder why Sergio invokes so much more emotion one way or the other than Justin Rose, because and I get that some of it is personality. Like Sergio is easy to hate, but he's also kind of easy to love. I think part of it is Sergio has just a very, this sounds so dumb and maybe I'm just too deep into it. He's got a very interesting swing. He's very viscerally enjoyable to watch him swing. And I think with Rose, it's a little, I don't know, mechanical and just, it's just,
he's
not
a big dude. When he gets those big long arms swinging around, it's not very relatable.
Yeah. And with Sergio, it's not jaw dropping, but it's in the same way that when you watch DJ swing, you're like, wow, how does he do that?
Well, we can get to it. I love watching Xander swing.
You like watching Xander?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. He's got a tiny body. He figures out a way to get some force out of that. That's impressive.
You know whose swing I really love?
Who?
Ricky.
Yeah.
I love it. I think it's great. I'm not like the biggest like Ricky fanboy ever in terms of like his, you know, just the whole deal, but I love his swing. I think it's awesome. Anyway. I don't know. I feel like we go through this a lot with Rose. Do we not talk about this a lot in terms of like why people do or don't like him?
Only because he continues to win. In the same way that Virginia basketball continues to have 31 seasons, and yet no one is picking them to win the championship in their bracket.
Well, so here's the other deal. So Sergio wins his 35th PGA Tour start. Okay, so he's got one in 35. And then he gets his sixth by his 165th event. So he wins six of his first 165. Rose doesn't get his first PGA Tour win until his 162nd start. So it took Sergio in their first 160 starts on the PGA Tour, Sergio won six times, Rose won once. But since then, Rose has won nine more times, and Sergio's only won four more times, and they both have 10 now. Rory, by the way, 14 in his first 140. Yeah, 14 in his first 135, which is, so Rory's won 14 before Rose won his first in terms of overall PGA Tour events, which is crazy.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, it's not that crazy when you peak early, but classic Rory, peaking early. All right, let's go.
But I guess my point here is like this late in his career sort of, it's not a resurgence, just, I mean, Rose is, he's won six of his last 31 events worldwide.
This is the combination of things which feel hollow. And I'm saying this as somebody who is a fan of Justin Rose the human being, Justin Rose, the golfer, Justin Rose, the current world number one, but Justin Rose, world number one, Justin Rose, defending FedEx Cup champion, which you mentioned this on a podcast before, but it's like all of a sudden we're treating the FedEx Cup champion like it was a major winner. You are 100% right on that, because as the diehard fans of the First Cup podcast know, I was all about that live blog life on Thursday and Friday, so I spent a lot of time with the coverage, and they did not stop mentioning defending FedEx Cup champion Justin Rose. So, and then
I know
you throw that on top of the gold medal, which is the ultimate, like, oh, gold medalist Justin Rose. Like,
yeah,
it's just there are all of these accolades which suggest that Justin Rose is potentially one of the most dominant golfers of the last 3 years, and yet all of those accolades feel hollow and no one's ready to jump on board.
But why do they feel hollow? I mean, I don't know that I disagree with you. I think part of the problem, he's won a lot of these events that are like talking points because they are, I need to be careful how I say this, because they're closely affiliated with big sponsorships or important.
I got you. Yeah.
Partnerships.
Correct.
Between networks, yes, and events and everything else.
Yes.
And so maybe that's some of it, but I don't know. He's dominated all over. I mean, you go back to fall 2017. He won China. He won Turkey. Then he wins the Indonesian Masters at the end of 17, and then he wins Colonial last year. He finished the second at Dell Technologies and BMW. He finishes third again at China. He wins Turkey again, and then he wins Farmers. I mean, that's a 18-month run or whatever, 15-month run, that's unbelievable. Second at the Open. I mean, it's 10th at the U.S. Open last year, 12th at the Masters. I mean, who's better at golf?
I was tracing it all the way back to the hold your mouth Sergio, especially when you introduced it there, where it's like basically since that Masters, Justin Rose has been nothing but world class.
Well, he couldn't make par on Sergio couldn't make par on 16, which I made par on that Monday after the it's not that hard of a hole. I mean, I don't know what to tell you guys.
You're good for that one. You're awful for that one, but you're great for that one. Shout out to Carl Patterson Jr., my father, who threw this out here at dinner. He said, Justin Rose won the FedEx Cup at an event where no one cared about Justin Rose, and it was all Tiger. We showed up to Torrey, and everyone else showed up to Torrey for Tiger, and he was an afterthought in terms of the competition, and Justin Rose won the GD tournament.
Yeah.
How funny is that?
It is interesting. And even if you go, go back to the Open last year even. Do you think that people remember that Rose finished ahead of Tiger in that Open, just behind Molinari?
No, not at all.
No. They remember
Tiger and Frankie, and they would probably think that Tiger finished second.
I know.
They probably would think that that was the way it was.
But I mean, Rose is so, I think the thing that really impresses me about him, and he really showed this on Sunday. So he bogeys three of his first five holes. And if that's Taylor Gooch that does that, it might be over, right? Like that might just be like a 78 waiting to happen. And with Rose, you're like, whatever, man. Like he's going to shoot a 70. He's going to shoot a 71. I guess if he would have shot a 71, it would have been a playoff. But the point is like,
He finished with a 69, and there was no doubt that he was going to finish under par, even after those. Or like it was like, oh no. I've been watching this guy play through 63, 66, a defensive 69. He has a couple bogeys. He'll figure out a way to get him back.
I think the thing that's underrated about him a little bit, he's close to 40, if he's not already 40, and I feel like he just is still so locked into the grind. He's made hundreds of millions of dollars, and he's got this great life. Like it does, but he's, I think he just is obsessed with golf. I think he loves it. And that's the Phil Mickelson sort of characteristic that I think, it's a little underrated in terms of like what the general public sees. And I think it's pretty cool. And I think it is something that he certainly possesses.
Breaking down what we saw from Tiger and the rest of the leaderboard right after this.
It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there, and I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now, here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out. Vuori.com/first and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
So back to the big cat. What do we think? I mean, he was all over the cup and just could not get a putt to drop. All through Friday, all through Saturday, two rounds that could have been 67 or 68 by his own account ended up being 70s. You know, then all of a sudden you get this late surge on Sunday with the early start time. How do we grade out Tiger Woods with his 2019 debut?
Well, here's two things for me. So the first is he did not shoot a 9-hole score over par. Which maybe that's just me. Maybe that's dumb. I feel like it matters. You're just keeping yourself in the tournament. And the second is he was 10th in the field from tee to green. And so did he putt well? No.
But he didn't putt poorly. I mean, all right. So you spent more time with him on Saturday and Sunday than I did. I truly believe that he was not lost on the greens. He just could not get a putt to drop. Watched a lot of Tiger Thursday, Friday. That was takeaway.
I don't mean, like when you watch it, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I'm just saying they didn't fall. And so essentially your formula for winning this tournament is you don't get two otherworldly performances from Adam Scott and Justin Rose, and you make three or four putts. Like that's it. And I know that sounds like I'm like Tiger fanboy here, like trying to get him to 100 wins or whatever. But my point is that he's not. It wasn't like he checked all the boxes for me. Like I did nothing. And again, I'm fading Tiger this year. I'm out on Tiger winning this year. And so I'm a little concerned because I felt like he played a lot better than I thought he was going to.
I thought that you were kind of on board with him being able to play all right here.
At Torrey, but generally for the year, I'm fading him. Like, I don't think he's going to win. I don't think he's going to win a major. But I thought he played a lot better this week than I thought he was. You're saying that I came into the week thinking that he was going to play pretty well?
Yeah, I mean, I looked at Tiger Woods this week. I did not expect him to win, and I thought that what he showed was a game that was perfect. I mean, I sent you this. It was like perfect for golf, and that is the most meta conversation ever. But the idea that a Tiger Woods who is not totally lost off the tee, a Tiger Woods who is not necessarily like dialed in, but certainly not hurting himself on approach shots. And a Tiger Woods who has birdie opportunities, but the putts just aren't dropping, is the most amazing carrot that you can dangle in front of golf fans to get us to keep coming back week after week after week after week. Because that is, and that is, like, I don't know whether that is positive or negative for anyone outside of us who benefit from golf interest, but like, that is something that I will, as a golf fan, as a Tiger fan, will continue to show up for. Is like, oh, you're telling me that his health is good. He is not just launching it into the woods on every single tee, and he is putting himself in position to have birdie opportunities. Like, I will sign up to watch all of that golf forever. And when you get that, even if Tiger doesn't win, even if Tiger, you know, makes the cut by one stroke and, you know, ends up finishing what? A touch. You said Rory finished a touchdown behind. Where did Tiger finish?
He finished 11 back.
11 back? Yeah. No, I'm there for it. Like, that's,
yeah.
I thought that all of that was positive.
Yeah. I think the problem is that it didn't really come until the end. Right, it didn't really happen until the last nine holes. And so the whole weekend he's down 14, 15, 16.
Oh, he knew he was out of it. Like,
yeah.
At the end of Friday, his post-round press conference was very defeated. Like, he knew that he was happy to make the weekend and he was going to make the most of his time at a course where he likes, but it was very clear that he was not going to be winning.
I'm sitting here trying to figure out, because you called me out on saying that I thought Tiger was going to play well this week. I can't remember which side of that I argued now. I might have argued both sides. I have no idea. And I think actually your point about how I think it's easy to argue both sides right now for Tiger. Like, you could, I think I could argue my way into like convincing somebody Tiger's going to win three times this year. Look at these stats. Look at him finishing number one on the PGA Tour in strokes gained approach shots last year. Look at him finishing 10th in his first start in 2019 from tee to green. But then I also feel like I could argue the other side of it and say, I don't know that at 43 we're going to get consistent Tiger for long stretches of time. And so maybe Torrey is like the apex of the first part of the year, and that's the best we get. Like, I just feel like he's, but that's fascinating, right? Like, that's the carrot that you're talking about, is that it's easy to argue it both ways with Tiger. Whereas for the entire course of his career, early on, because he was so great, and the last 5 years, because he was so bad, it wasn't easy to argue both ways. You were pretty much going to be right if you were in kind of that extreme camp of him being the best in the world, or hey, maybe he shouldn't be at this tournament.
I love it. As somebody who covers Alabama football, when you've got that kind of crack, like, you can't give it up.
Tiger's kind of like OU.
Oh.
Right?
Just based on, like, you've got this base level of consistency that it's always going to be there, but the national championship might only be, like, once every 20 years.
Yeah, well, and like, I guess more of my point is, like, when it's clicking, it's like, it's unbelievable.
Oh yeah.
Like, you're just like, oh my gosh. Like, what am I watching?
You have, I promise you, there is no shortage of hundreds of Oklahoma State fans that are Kyle Porter fans that just like threw up right now.
Well, that's fine. I mean, Oklahoma State, Mike Gundy's 2-13 against OU. So I don't, 2-12, whatever.
A little bit more comfortable with that.
I've seen what I've seen.
More important, all right, more significant. I'll throw this one out there. We're going to tie them together. Our two Aussies. Adam Scott felt like he was in the mix for most of the week. Very impressed with Adam Scott's game. I thought that he did a great job this week. We go 70, 66, 65, 68. To close, he finishes solo too. But Jason Day, like, and some of this might be the way the broadcast was, and some of this might have just been my own attention span, but between those two, you know, like what were your strong takeaways? Jason Day, by the way, 67, 71, 69, or 69, 67. He finishes 14 under. Adam Scott, 5 strokes ahead at 19 under. Felt like we had a little bit of blast from the past from both of them. Guys who were, you know, at the top of the golf world 2013, 2014, 2015, all kind of having a little bit of a moment here. You know, how do we grade the Aussies?
Well, first of all, Adam Scott looked jacked.
Like, like strength-wise, he looked jacked.
He looked huge. Has he been, like, spending the offseason with LaRon Landry or something?
I'm not going to let you go through another LaRon Landry. That's your second LaRon Landry reference.
I couldn't get over how big he looked. Now he
did you drop LaRon Landry on Twitter? Follow Kyle on Twitter at Kyle Porter CBS.
No, I did. I've got like 4 jokes. People are so sick of me. It's unbelievable.
did they say that to you at the PGA merch show? They say, "Hey, we're sick of your LaRon Landry jokes, Kyle."
Yeah, you've got 4 jokes. Please leave. Get out of here. I thought Adam Scott looked. I mean. I have a lot of thoughts on Adam Scott. He was swinging really, like, it was funny because they're showing his swing, which is obviously beautiful, but he was swinging really hard, and the broadcasters were like, "Oh, just look at how, like, you know, fluid it is." And I was like, "He's taking hacks right now. Like, he's swinging out of his shoes." And he was hitting the ball great. I mean, his performance on Saturday, that 65, was incredible. I heard a lot about him putting with the pin in this weekend, which was pretty interesting. And I feel like, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how much of that is mental. Like, the whole putting with the pin in thing has been a much bigger story than I thought it would be. Like, it's been a real thing.
I don't care. I don't care.
But it gets talked about a lot. And it's, I know. And it's weird. And like, by the way, did you see the putt he missed on the front nine on Sunday?
I did not.
Oh, it was 1 foot 10 inches. And it didn't, he putted it with the pin in and it didn't touch the pin. I'm serious. It did not even nick the pin. It was bad. But I was thinking about
12 inches, 13 inches.
No, it was 22 inches.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I was thinking about the putting with the pin in thing. I think the greatest benefit is from, like, 70 feet.
Right. No, or downhill. That's always been my thought was, if you're downhill and you feel like you can get a good line and speed is your concern, then leave the pin in.
But it's still, like, with Adam Scott banking in like these 9 footers off the pin, I'm like, is this what we want golf to be? Is Nick Saban here? Is this what we want golf to be?
Is this what we want golf to be? Is Dustin Johnson taking an absurd line on a tee shot? Listen, Adam Scott has gone through enough with him on the green. I don't have any more attention dollars to spend on Adam Scott and whether he's using a certain kind of putter or whether he is leaving the pin in. I mean, how about this? I'll throw it to another one. If our good friend Webb Simpson decided he was going to go all pin in, I wouldn't have time for it. I've spent enough time talking about all these different putter changes and everything else. Like, you've got limited amounts of attention dollars that I think we should spend talking about your habits on the green. Like, Bryson, we're done. You're it. You've exhausted it for your career.
Okay, how about this? Adam Scott finishes number 1 in the field in strokes gained approach and number 14 in the field in putting. And if you tell me that on Wednesday of last week, I'm like, well, he won by 10. Or maybe 15. Because if Adam Scott, I mean, he was some of those approach shots, man, it was a show. I mean, it was so impressive. On Saturday and Sunday, he finished Sunday with four straight birdies.
Hideki played well too. Like this was a classic tournament of it's really freaking hard to win right now.
Yeah. I thought Rory played well too.
Oh, we haven't even talked about how Rory McIlroy dropped a 65 round of the day on Friday. How John Rahm was like dropped a 62 on Thursday and then just lost his cool, but still maintained to finish in the top five. Like the caliber of golf that we saw at Torrey Pines was pretty incredible. Like a tournament that you mentioned yourself, normally what 10 under, 9 under wins.
Yeah.
And all these names that we've thrown out were 14 under or better.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty great. And I thought Rory was impressive because he only made five bogeys on the week, which is crazy at a place like Torrey. I don't know what his, I think tee to green, he was top five.
He was number one off the tee, I think.
Yeah, he was number one in distance off the tee. He was ninth from tee to green and T54 in putting. So, you know, same story, different locale. But
I watched a lot of Rory birdie putts not go in.
Welcome. I feel like he's been,
bro, that live vlog life is tough.
Yeah,
it's been a minute since I've been in it.
Yeah, it's a lot, but I feel like Rory's played, I mean, he's played really well this year. I know he's only played two events. I don't know. I'm excited about his season. I think the weird thing, and this is something that people have had to get used to with Tiger, is like you look at Tiger and you're like, oh, he's just a guy. And I don't mean he's like just a guy like Sung Kang is just a guy, but he's just one of the 12 or one of the 15. And the same is kind of true of Rory, and that's a world that I'm not particularly used to just because of the way he started his career. And like the weird thing about it is that it almost works against him because you're like, oh, well, Rory stinks now. And it's like, well, does he? Because let's look at the numbers. Like, he's one of the like seven best guys in the world, like right. No matter how you look at it. And just because he hasn't won since, at least on the PGA Tour, since last year's Bay Hill, like it just kind of works against him a little bit. But he's played great. If he putts in any event, I think he's going to win it. And who knows? Maybe that'll be at Riviera in 2 weeks.
The big booty Spaniard, he lost his cool a little bit.
I mean, yeah,
it's been a minute since I've seen John Rahm. Like, I kind of felt like he got the bad reputation for how he lets his emotions get the best of him. And then all of a sudden, the narrative and the story for the commentators became, you know, he's done a good job of maintaining his emotions and this, that, or the other. And so to see him lose his cool a little bit felt good. It was a good reminder that he's a young buck.
Here's what I was thinking about Chip. Would you be surprised? Like, let's say you just take the Farmers leaderboard name out of it. Just take Farmers out. And just slide in Augusta National. Would you be surprised if this is what the leaderboard looks like in 2 months?
Not at all.
I know, right?
All the way to Hideki, like
Rose, Scott, Hideki,
Day, McIlroy, Day, Rahm,
Rory, Rahm,
yeah, absolutely.
Woodland.
Yeah.
I mean, it. Finau, Patrick Reed's up there. Tiger's up there. I mean, you can throw it. You can throw DJ and JT and Koepka at me. The only thing I would be surprised about is that Jordan Spieth didn't finish in the top 10. Like, that's the only difference between this and an Augusta leaderboard. I'm not saying that Torrey is like you can take what happens at Torrey and apply it to Augusta, but that's what this board looks like to me.
Why was Jordan Spieth so average after a 65 on Thursday?
Well, I don't know. He played the he played the South course in 72 every day, but the way he did it was bizarre. So he
very
got to
different
11,
every single time.
Yeah, he got to 11 under on the 14th hole. He makes birdie on 14 on Saturday, and he's 11 under. And I think Rose is at like 15, and you're like, oh, okay, well, he's within four. There's, you know, it's not probably not going to happen. There's only 22 holes left, but still, okay. And then he goes triple bogey, par par, and then he opens today bogey bogey, and then four pars and another bogey. So within, what is that, 11 holes, he drops 7 shots. You're like, oh, okay, that's not good. And I don't know. I don't know. Looking at his numbers, he wasn't good from tee to green. He actually putted all right. He was 49th. I guess that's not very good, but he was about field average in putting.
Dude, his putter was out of control on Thursday.
His putter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He only hit 12. Slappy AF. Like all over the place on Thursday. And it
he
was
hit 5 fairways.
And his he was good with his chipping too. Like, I mean, he was, that was, you know, Thursday and Friday I was dialed in, and it was all of him just being all over the place and figuring out a way to scramble it together.
Yeah,
and
that's what he does.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I just feel like I watch him and I just have the least amount of confidence that I've ever had that something great is going to happen with him right now. And I don't know what changes that. Maybe it's another, you know, run at Augusta later on this year or something. But, you know, he's got a few months to figure it out.
All right. So who else stood out?
Doug Gim. He was great. He's a Texas guy. He won, or I guess he finished runner up at the USAM a couple years ago, was the low AM at the Masters last year. He's really fun to watch. He kind of looks like, I tweeted this, but he kind of looks like Jason Day. If he's looking down, like not looking at the camera. But yeah, he's a good player. Let's see here. I don't know. I think that's all I got. Taylor Gooch probably going to win. He'll probably win 2 or 3 legs of the Grand Slam this year. So
I think that my biggest takeaways were from Rory.
Really?
Yeah.
How so?
That if he doesn't, like, he is much closer to really disrupt. Like, we've become very comfortable with Rory as this already peaked character. And I have continued, like, I've been among the people who have sort of had this Rory's already peaked story. And, you know, if that 71 on Thursday is a 67, maybe things are different.
Don't we keep saying that though?
Yeah. I just, you know, you messed me up because you were talking about how listening to Rory will make
this is
you,
my fault.
Will make you start to like really think more about big picture stuff. And that's, you know, he was as insightful and thoughtful and mindful as always, talking about both his bad round on Thursday and his good round on Friday. Round of the day, 65, best round on the course.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh, okay. Well, we've seen that this is an all-world talent, and it doesn't seem to be unstable right now. No one is thinking that Rory's stock is low, but I am not going to start betting against him. How about that? People talk about Kyler Murray. I'm not betting against Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
I'm not. I covered him in person for a decent amount of time. That boy has an unwavering mindset.
Yeah.
And I'm not betting against him.
I think the thing with Rory is he seemed we're at like an hour. I don't need to like start psychoanalyzing Rory right now, but here we go. He seems very comfortable right now.
He does.
It was so interesting to hear him talk to. I guess he was talking to Amanda Balionis on Saturday, and she was like, you know, why are you playing? Why are you playing Tory or something like that?
First time.
I like her questions, by the way. She asks good questions. But
shout out Amanda. If you want to come on the show, holler at us. We work for the same company. All of our paychecks get signed by the CBS Corporation. Come talk to us.
And he was like, his answer was so interesting because he was like, well, I knew I wanted to play Hawaii and I knew I was playing Riviera and I didn't want a 5-week break in between. So I was trying to decide between Phoenix and here. And he was like, I'm just really glad I came here. It's been a really cool experience. I've enjoyed playing this course. I've played pretty well. It's been a great experience. And it was just like, it was as if you and I went to like Bandon together and I got home and my wife was like, how was it? And I was like,
it was a good experience.
It was a great experience. With Chip. We drank some beers and played terrible golf and laughed a lot. And it was a really fun trip. Like, that's what it sounded like. And I think that's...
a healthy place to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And like, I think that when Rory is in that place, that he probably... I don't know. I think that's where he plays his best golf. I think when he starts to, like, break down, like, his practice schedule and, like, you know, how many hours is the track man on a day and stuff... I think that's where it goes a little sideways. And so when he's talking about like good experiences at new courses, I'm like, okay, you know, let's see what happens over the next few weeks and months.
Is it still Harry Diamond on the bag?
Yeah. By the way, here's a take. And we got a bunch of Twitter questions and comments that because we're an hour in, should we push those to like, we're going to tape something else on Tuesday or Wednesday. Should we push those to then?
Probably. I mean, okay. Officially we're at 47-27 at the moment, but yes.
Yeah. I just. So everybody who sent stuff in, we're going to bump it, but we'll still get to it. Here's a take. I think the two guys that
we haven't even talked about how Bryson committed human rights violations in Dubai.
Here's a take. Yeah. Here's a take. I think Bryson and Rose should be the Masters favorites.
I agree.
And I think that they're both going to be there on Sunday this year. And that sounds like just...
No, that is not silly at all. That's a stone-cold sober take based on the last 9 months of golf. If you were to take the last 9 months of golf, there is no way... Like, take me back to Memorial last year. You're not going to tell me that Bryson and Justin Rose are not the two best players in the world.
Well, Xander's up there, but yes, I think you're right. And
Xander over Ricky Fowler head to head.
But I think that like,
shout out fade the equipment change, except for Justin Rose.
I mean, they both have a history there. Obviously Rose's is, much deeper and more successful, but Bryson played really well there in his amateur year, whenever that was, 15 or 16. I think it was 16 when Willett won, until late on Friday afternoon. But anyway, I think like if you fast forward me to back nine Augusta on Sunday this year, and it's Bryson at like, I don't know, 14 under, tied with Justin Thomas, and Justin Rose is one back, one pairing ahead of them at 15 under, I'd be like, yeah, okay. That's sure. I'm in. Like that could happen. That probably will happen. I don't know. I go back to the this is so dumb, but I go back to the Dubai thing where
Willett won. Sergio
won.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
But bro, they did not set the course record at 24 under and win by 7 strokes.
I know. It was a felony.
He burned it down.
I don't know if he'll even make it back from Dubai to play the Masters. He might be detained.
If we're going to be honest, based on what Bryson DeChambeau did in the United Arab Emirates, I don't know if he's going to be able to escape customs.
He is so good.
He's really good right now. So he's what, 24, right? Or 25?
25, yeah.
He's 25 years old.
Yeah.
We are going to have like moments throughout his career where he is stellar. And I think he's going to have that supernova quality. This is just me absolutely projecting, where we are going to get him at moments where everything is clicking for him, but because of the way his brain and his game works, then he's going to get lost. And I think we should savor that he is in his pocket right now.
I mean, I was dying because on the CBS broadcast, I think it was Nance talking to Fado, and he was like, I mean, he's going to be number one in the world like in a month. And I was like, in my head, I was like, wait, what? Yeah, he probably is. I mean, he's not, because Justin Rose will be, but it's very difficult to win the USAM and the NCAAs in the same year. Obviously, that's, you know, not a hot take, but it never clicked with me. Like, okay, this guy's a future number one, like it does with some other guys. And now it's like, man, I don't know what to do with him.
I love it.
He's unbelievable. I go back to Ryan Lavner had a great quote from some college coach. I think it was an unnamed college coach because of the quote, but he said, I don't know, man, in 5 years, he's either going to be number one in the world or in a straitjacket. And I have no idea. And I have no idea which one it's going to be. So apparently it's looking like number one in the world.
No, it really is. It's 100%. The green jacket going on Bryson is not an insane thought.
I know. I was just thinking that. What if Bryson wins the Masters?
It is not a what if. Like, Patrick Reed broke the matrix for me.
No kidding.
In terms of me trying to be like, oh, how crazy would it be if X player won? No. Patrick Reed winning the Masters and the way he did it and who he beat, especially on Sunday, was just sort of broke my expectations for it. So, Bryson winning the Masters actually would be acceptable at this point.
I was texting Sean Martin and Brendan Porath, both friends of the pod. This was like last year. And we were talking about Bryson or something. And Porath was like, or no, maybe we talked about it on a podcast. I think we did. Maybe it was on this podcast. I don't remember. I don't even remember what I said about Tiger last week. But Porath said something like, oh, yeah, he's probably a one-win-a-year guy or maybe a two-win-a-year guy. And Sean like lost it. He's like, no, there's, you know, what are you saying? Like, what are we talking about here? And so I texted him today and I was like, yeah, you should have been freaking out, but it's because Porath was way too low on his annual wins for Bryson. He's like a 4-win-a-year guy. I mean, his last year has been unreal all over the world, different tournaments, different feel. I mean, he's just been, you know, again, like I want to see it at major championships, but his last year has been incredible.
But like we said, this run, whether it was last week or this week at Dubai, these are one of those tournaments that you talk about when, it's not a PGA Tour win, but if Bryson finishes T5 at the Masters and we're going into the U.S. Open, we're like, and remember, he set the course record 24-under at Dubai. It's a meaningful tournament, and he had a meaningful finish.
Hey, you know, real quick, you know who's about to just light the world up, though?
Who?
I think Justin Thomas is about to go on a tear.
Why?
I don't know. I just feel like
It's been 3 weeks since we've seen Justin Thomas go on a tear.
No, I just have a feeling. I don't know. Like, I feel like he's about to win like three.
That's a very low stakes bet, Kyle. I think that you'd be like, you know what?
No,
that's like me coming around, be like, You know what? It's been a minute since the Tar Heels have covered the spread. I think the market's really turned against them.
It's not a low stakes bet because nobody's going on these runs right now because everybody's so hard to win, and because they only play the same events, it just you don't get 3 out of 7 or 4 out of 13 or whatever. And I think that's what we're about to get from him. I think he's going to win the Masters. I think he's going to win a Florida event. I think he could win the Players. And I don't know. I just have a feeling that it's about to rain. He's about to make it rain.
I love this story so much that I'm not going to argue against it. I would argue against it for the sake of the podcast, but I will tell you right now that it makes me so happy for no reason, but just the idea that Justin Thomas, in the midst of everything else that's going on in golf, would just become the singular force that could not be denied. I'm here for it.
And I promise you this. I've been saying this. I've been writing about it. But if he wins the Masters, there's going to be some, Do we have the wrong guy between him and Steve?
No, there's not. No.
Yes, there is. With the way Steve is playing right now.
No.
Yes.
No. 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 Until
you don't think that'll happen?
No, because I think Golf Illuminati respects the Open too much. That he's got to go. He's got to go. Really be in the mix for the claret jug.
What about Augusta Pebble this year?
That would be a strong contention, especially because of the way that Jordan Spieth's U.S. Open title looks in the big picture with history.
Dude, I sat down at Golf Channel last week, and people can. So we're doing this thing.
Have you already taped this?
Yeah, I don't know if this is public, but whatever. We're doing this thing. Nobody's listening to this anyway. We're doing this thing where it's like this 8 to 10 minute feature on the 18 Masters. And
there are a couple thousand people who listen to these. Whether they're still around right now is yet to be determined. But I do know for a fact at least a couple thousand people listen to these.
Okay. So it's a Golf Channel feature, a look back on the 18 Masters, and each writer had a different player that they were talking about. So somebody had, well, poor, again, I don't know if this is public, but Porath had Reed, obviously. Two other people had Rory and Ricky because they both finished up near the top. And I got Spieth. And I would argue I got the best one to talk about.
Oh, yeah, because I was never looking at the scoreboard. I was just going trying to score as low as I could.
Oh, my gosh. What is that?
His baby explanation for how he wasn't paying attention to his score.
I mean, if you're not looking at your score at that point, you are the most self-disciplined human being in the history of humans.
Which maybe he is, whatever. But yes.
Yeah, maybe so.
most interesting to write about for the 18 Masters. I think I agree 100%.
But it was so I just, somebody just basically just threw questions at me for 45 minutes. And I couldn't believe how crazy it was to think back and look back on that round and like all the things that happened, him making the putt on 12 from off the green, him hitting it to like 6 feet on 13 for eagle, the putt on 16, the fact that he had a birdie on 17 to get to 10 under on the round. Are you kidding me? Just all these things that happened. So anyway, I think the feature is going to be, it's like, make fun of me. I'm going to come off like a clown, but the feature is going to be cool because it was such a fun and interesting and dramatic final round, even though the ending, the Reed part wasn't that dramatic.
Or that exciting.
No.
No.
Well, I talked about that too.
We'll see if it makes the final cut. Hey, this is the first cut.
Yeah.
You've done a good job.
Thank you, Chip.
We will get back with you, and we'll be looking ahead to the week.
You can follow him on Twitter at KylePorterCBS. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Make sure that you subscribe. Make sure that you go check out ZipRecruiter, ZipRecruiter.com/FirstCut. Kyle, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip.